Today is August 26th, 2015, and this is episode number 321 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO. Now, to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com. And I'm betting since you didn't hear Brian's voice, you guys have already picked up on the fact that he is still in the witness protection program. Vacation, and isn't with me today, but he'll be back again next week. But in the meantime, I thought it would be really cool to have Bob Dr. Mac Levitas on with me. How are you, Bob?
I'm awesome, and boy, do I love impersonating Brian.
You know, I think your Brian impersonation is fantastic.
I haven't got the hair down yet.
No.
But I'm trying. I'm trying.
Yeah.
How are you today?
I'm doing all right.
I love being on this podcast. Thanks for having me.
Oh, sure. Yeah, this is a lot of fun. And what I did last week and what I'm doing this week, it's slightly different format for the show, because it's not like we'll end up in arguments about topics, which is okay, but it's just a little bit different. And I figured, since I had you here, we should look at and talk about things that that relate to you directly and are interesting to you, and it'll
things
be
things that tickle my hot buttons.
That's right. We're going to tickle your buttons, Bob.
Ooh,
yeah.
This now, is going to be fun.
That's the plan.
Stay tuned.
So, what we should probably start with, though, is a little public service announcement, and you totally took one for the team on this. So the deal is, there's the iPhone 6 Plus camera replacement program that Apple launched. And the deal is that the motion sensor that's in the camera to account for jiggle, so that if you're moving the camera, you get a still image, that's messed up. And so what happens is it misinterprets you holding the camera still as you're moving, and so it jiggles the camera, and now you get a blurry picture. So they're replacing those defective cameras. And Bob, you did a field test for us, and you went in to see if you could get yours replaced.
Well, yes, because I checked my serial number on the page Apple put up, and it was one of the ones that was affected. And I have some blurry pictures. Now, the truth is, I take a lot of blurry pictures, so I wasn't sure if I had the disease or not. And I didn't find out. I'll tell you in a minute. There's some other symptoms you can look for, but. So I had one. It was funny. I couldn't get an appointment that was convenient for me until Friday. There were very few iPhone appointments available this week. I don't know what that is about. It could be this. And the thing is, they tested it. And the way they tested it was to take a couple of photos of objects on the table and then to tap the screen a few times to see how the autofocus was working. And the genius said to me, the autofocus is kind of a indicator of the problem. If the autofocus isn't working right, if it doesn't focus on where you tap and do it pretty quickly, if it looks confused, if it zooms in and out and in and out, that pretty much tells you that you've got a defective camera. Otherwise, no. So they took it in the back for a few minutes, and when he came back, he said, "I'm sorry, but it's not blurry, and autofocus is working," so they declined to repair it, which is fine. I'm glad to know that it works. And they also told me that the plan is in effect for 3 years from purchase date. So if it goes south any time in the next couple, 2.5 years, I already know the drill.
Right. And now you also know that if your camera isn't exhibiting the symptoms, then good luck getting Apple to replace it. So
don't bother going in if you think, "Oh, good, I'll get a new camera. That's great." Or they'll swap my phone and I'll get a new phone. No, not happening. If you're not seeing blurry pictures or problems with autofocus, don't bother.
Yep, there you go. And if you're not sure how to check your camera or your iPhone, excuse me, to see if it's in the camera replacement program, I'll make sure that we have a link in the show notes so that you only have one place to go look.
And there's a link in the article if you're reading that while you're listening to us.
Right. And then also, I'll make sure there's a link to your piece, Bob, where you talked about your experience going in to get the camera checked out.
Yes. And all told, it took, you know, this was a walk-in with no appointment, so it took about a half hour to get to see someone and about a half hour from the time of my appointment to the time they sent me out the door. So, you know, it cost me an hour, and with any luck at all, I've just saved thousands of people that hour.
I certainly hope so.
I hope so, too.
Yeah. All right. Well, sorry you didn't get a new camera, but...
No big deal. You know, it's nice to know that mine isn't affected, that the blurriness is all my own fault, you know?
Yeah, but on the other hand...
Confirming that the blurriness is all.
Yeah, I was going to say, on the other hand, now we've confirmed that that you can't hold your camera still.
Probably.
Yeah.
I do try to put it on a tripod or something stable anytime I can, because I've learned that my hands, even though they feel stable, I think they're stable, they're not that stable. And so if my phone is resting on something when I shoot pictures, they generally come out a lot better. That's a great tip, by the way. And if you have an Apple Watch, you can set the phone down, aim it at something, and trigger it from your watch, which is... pretty
That's
sweet.
Right. Apple Watch has a camera remote app on it.
Which is a very sweet thing if you can find a good place for the camera, you know, where it'll be secure and pointed where you want it. It's pretty cool to be sitting, you know, across the room from it, look on your watch, make sure it's got what you want, and tap the button on the watch and hear it click across the room. It's great.
That is pretty cool.
Hey. Now, $400 is a lot for a camera remote. I can recommend cheaper ones, but
yeah, but this one also tells time
and talks.
There you go. It's suddenly worth $400, or if you have a smallest wrist like me, $350.
Yeah,
yeah. Now, before the show started today, while you were waiting for me to finish up TMI
Your
Daily Observations.
Podcast.
Yeah, because I'm recording back-to-back, people. I'm like hardcore like that. So Bob was killing time, and you started playing with the Logic 10.2 update, which has an album on it.
Ooh, it's a good thing I put the Skype ringer up really loud, because I was down the rabbit hole. I think if you hadn't called and told me it was time to do a podcast, I would still be down there playing with synthesizer sounds I haven't heard since the 60s or 70s.
That's pretty awesome. And
it is if you're a musician, or you like keyboard instruments, or you like synthesizers, or you just like stuff that you can play with and make sound, check it out. You know, it was a free upgrade. So if you have Logic, it's not in GarageBand, right?
Yeah.
Maybe someday, but... If you have Logic, crank it open. Download the new update, crank it open, and create a new software instrument track and open up Alchemy. You can spend all day just listening to the presets, all the ones that are supplied with it. And then when you get sick of that, start turning knobs and listening.
That's pretty awesome.
It is really awesome.
I was kind of surprised at the update, because not only is Alchemy part of Logic 10.2, but there was a bunch of other updates or changes that came along with this, including adding in, it's like, what, 1,000 more loops?
Another 1,000 loops, which is great, because who doesn't always want more new loops? You get sick of the ones that you've heard over and over again, and, you know, your few favorites that you use over and over again. Nice to have new ones.
That is pretty cool. I think if this had been coming from any other company, this would have been a paid upgrade and not just a point release.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, for people that don't know what Alchemy is, do you want to fill them in?
Yeah, it was in Logic before, right?
It was a module you could get for Logic, as I recall.
Oh, it was third party, but it was from eMusic, which is who made Logic, and that Apple bought many years ago. And so It's a sample manipulating synthesizer. And it was gone for how long? Probably, I don't know. I haven't heard about it in 5-10 years. It's been a long time.
Yeah, I don't follow that part of the market closely enough. So I'm not sure if it's been like a year or if it's been multiple years.
I think it's been multiple years. But
I bet we have a listener that's going to set us straight.
Somebody will tell us the whole story because I don't know it. I just remember hearing about it. And it was, I think in the old days, it was one of those things that I would have loved to play with, but it was like cost real money. You know, now that Logic is, what's $299 now?
I think it's $199.
When I was looking at it, I think it was $999. And that was more than I was going to spend on stuff to play with, whereas $199 for an audio recording app that's basically a recording studio in an app, and better than probably most recording studios I've been in my life, because it's been a long time since I set foot in a real recording studio.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, having all of that on your hard disk, and, of course, you can run it on a laptop. So a mobile recording studio for $200.
I'm going to take us totally down a rat hole, because you said a recording studio, and it just reminded me, because you've had history in the recording industry for a long time. Did you ever get to go to Caribou Ranch?
No, that's up by you, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
That's where Chicago recorded their first album, and lots of great albums. Honky Chateau.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Elton John flew over from the UK to record an album there. Yeah, a lot of people came and recorded at
All right, Caribou here's Ranch. Yeah, and here's I think a piece of trivia. It was owned by the producer, Jim Guercio. He owned it and built it, and it was state of the art in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It was the destination studio. I never got to work there. I basically worked in Los Angeles, and mostly I worked in studios that did post-production work for video, because I was working for an ad agency doing a lot of TV commercials.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd go in and we'd record the voiceover, and sometimes we'd record original music, but not very often. So, you know, I was in little studios all over L.A., but and I recorded bands, and I was trying to become a producer, but today Logic Pro is better than any studio I ever booked time in. I haven't done that in 30 years, but 30 years ago, you know, I was booking $200 an hour, $100 an hour. They were real studios, and I can do everything that I could do in those studios in my office here with Logic Pro. The one thing I don't have is the great sound shielding and baffling and echo suppression. But for a few hundred bucks, I could make
your windows.
Well, that's Caribou. I mean, not most studios don't have a view of anything. Most studios don't have windows.
Yeah, that's true. It is pretty cool, though, when I go driving up through Nederland to see the sign for the turnoff for Caribou Ranch.
I think it may still be a working recording studio. I can't tell you who's recorded there lately or anything about it, but, you know, once something is established, and certainly that was parts of it were purpose-built for recording audio, so chances are good it's still in service as a recording studio of some sort.
I hope it is, just because
I do too.
It's one of the cool places out there. Oh man! Anyhow,
well, you got that, and you got Red Rocks. I'm jealous.
I have performed Red Rocks. No kidding.
I was a roadie at Red Rocks once.
Okay, so we've both been on stage at Red Rocks. I happen to be playing an instrument, and you're being a roadie.
Well, I played a guitar on stage at Red Rocks. There were no people there. It was while I was setting up the gear for whoever I was. Oh, it was the Beach Boys. I was setting up the gear. But I did get to walk out to the front of the stage and play the opening riff to Stairway to Heaven.
Okay, that's awesome.
To an empty house, but still, I did that every night. Because it was fun, you know? It's like if you have to plug a guitar in and strum it to make sure it makes noise, you might as well play Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah, you might as well. And if you're going to be doing that at Red Rocks, even better. It's actually, you know, that's really cool. We can both say we played Red Rocks.
Sort of, for me. You actually played Red Rocks.
I actually played.
You were really a performer. Me, I was just doing what I did every night. I'd get up on stage in these arenas and say to myself, I'm going to bang out some power chords on this guitar because this is the closest I'm ever going to come to being a rock star. And it turned out I was wrong because I was a member of the Macworld All-Star Band, and that genuinely makes me a rock star, right?
Yes, it does. Every performance that I saw was better than the performance before, and every performance I saw, I didn't think it could get any better.
We're not done yet. We have plans for a comeback, a reunion tour.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think next year.
That'll be
awesome.
When Brian
was here in Austin, I told him my idea for making it happen, and he is enthusiastic. So we think we might be able to, hey, this is the first anybody's hearing of it, but we think we may be able to put together a Macworld All-Star Band reunion along with a bunch of other cool stuff in 2016.
That would be so awesome. And how cool is that? We're breaking the news right here.
Sorry, that's Brian.
No, that's all right. Now
and
now
Dave hasn't even heard yet, but Dave, oh, this is what we're going to do next year.
Well, I know Dave listens to all of our shows when he has time. So, Dave, surprise.
Guess what we're doing next year, buddy?
All right.
All right.
I'm looking forward to it. I'll be out in the audience dancing.
I will be, too, for the songs that I'm not playing guitar on.
Awesome. Awesome.
So stay tuned for that, listeners. Another exciting first here on the Apple Context Machine.
You heard
it here first.
Hey, so you wrote another piece. Was it yesterday? Today? The days all blur together for me.
I think it went up today.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, it did. Now that I think about it, so Wednesday morning, your piece about buying a Mac went up, and by buying a Mac, I really mean you offered some advice on when it's time to replace a Mac.
Yes. Well, it's kind of to me. I've gotten a few letters from readers over the past few months, but just recently I got one, and it kind of made me start thinking, what is my advice for when do you retire a Mac? And so I started thinking about it, and I thought, well, here's what I do. Okay, first of all, I will usually buy them pretty well equipped, but if not, I upgrade them so they have SSDs. Any of my older Macs that had hard disks, before I decided whether I was going to scrap them, I upgraded them to SSD, which is like getting a new Mac. So the first thing was, if you don't have an SSD in your Mac, get one and then decide whether you want to start thinking about replacing it with something better, faster, whatever. And the second thing was, I don't usually get rid of a Mac until it dies because we're good about backing up our data here. And, there's always a use for the Mac you used to have. In our case, with kids and wives and moms and dads. I mean, there's no shortage of people that can take a hand-me-down Mac, and they stay pretty much in service until they die.
Well, it's amazing
which can
how
be
long
10,
a Mac will
15
run.
15 years. Yeah, well, go look at some of the comments on the column up there. I already saw a couple of columns. One guy that just posted, one of his machines dates back to 1999, so that's a 16-year-old. And I'm sure if we had a competition, there are people running machines older than 1999, still running them, and not just as a conversation piece. I'm saying, you know, in regular service, doing something.
Yep. And actually, for a long time, I was running one of my older Macs as a server. And I mean, it had to be a 10-year-old Mac at the time. And it was great because it was handling all of my file server needs without any trouble at all. But we've moved so far beyond that. I mean, like, I don't need to have a computer like that sitting around anymore because I have what's that thing? The transporter sitting right there on the shelf, and it does everything that I needed from that old G3 right. Mac.
Right.
And
yeah, I had a MacBook that sat on a shelf with a couple of hard disks that was a file server for a while. And you're right. You don't really need something like that anymore. So those machines migrated out to the kids and stuff. But most mm-hmm. of these machines stay in service. I replaced my machine last year, and the machine I replaced it with was a 2000. I mean, the machine it replaced was a 2008 MacBook Pro. So I used that thing 6-7 years, and really, sure. it wasn't bad. I could have used it until it died, but I was getting to the point where. I was about to start another book, and I really wanted a Retina display.
Sure.
So I could show more stuff in my screenshots was really what it came down to, because I was doing it on a, I guess, 12-something by 7-something on my old MacBook Pro, the maximum mm-hmm. resolution. Wasn't very good, and I couldn't fit, like... A lot of times I'd try to shoot a screenshot of a window, and I'd have to shoot it in two parts and then splice them together to look like a longer window because the screen was too short. So that was my main reason. I mean, speed-wise, it had 8 gigs of RAM and an SSD, and my wife's using it now, and she's quite happy. You know, it's way faster than the machine it replaced, which was a really old iMac mm-hmm. that's now in the guest room. Brian used it when he was here.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, they trickle down, but until they die, I don't generally get rid of them, or really, most of the time, I don't replace mine until it's on its last legs. You know, it's like I work them until they're pretty much, you know, ready for retirement, or they can't be upgraded anymore, or I can't put a new operating system on them that I mm-hmm. need to run a piece of software I need, or, you know, any of those things comes along. Yeah, that's obsolete. But until it doesn't do stuff that I need it to do, we keep them in service until the day they die. And as long as you back up your stuff, that should be no trouble.
Right.
You know, if you've got a good backup, it dies. You go buy a new one, you come home, you plug it in, and in 2 hours or so, you're back where you were. You know, so you lose a half a day. And I have clones, so basically all I need to do is find a Mac and I can go back to work.
Which is a great way to be able to work. Now, when I was consulting many years ago, so this would have been for the graphic arts and advertising markets, printing and publishing, the advice that I gave my clients when they needed to get computers was, you buy as much Mac as you possibly can when you need it.
Right.
So you don't limp along with a machine that doesn't meet your needs anymore because, you know, at some point a newer model's coming out. Because it's business, and your competitors, they've already upgraded. And so right. now they're ahead of you. And then what I would tell them after that was, with the advances that happen with the hardware, even though you could use this same computer for 7 years at home, in your business, you need to upgrade it faster because your competition is doing the same. But you don't have to get rid of those old Macs. So the production Mac that had to be top of the line everything this year, 2 years from now, is going to be more than capable of being an administrative machine
for years
to come.
And they do run 7 to 10 years typically before they die. I mean, I'm thinking of all the Macs I've bought and all the ones I've had in the house, and I can't remember retiring one before 7 or 8 years of age, ever.
Yeah, typically mine are gone before that.
Yeah,
but that's only because I give them to family members that need computers.
Right. So I keep track of those, though. That's what I'm saying is, you know, my last maybe 6 computers are still somewhere in the house or family. So, you know, I'll know when they die and get replaced. And really, my daughter doesn't even have a television. She has a 27-inch iMac. And she's had it for probably 7 years, 6 years. And that's it. That's her one piece of big electronics, you know? Everything.
And it does all she needs.
It's exactly what she needs. She doesn't need faster. She doesn't need more storage. She streams, you know, she's a kid. She streams everything. Everything is streaming.
If that's a qualification for being a kid, then that's pretty awesome because I'm a kid too.
Well, I stream a lot, but I also hoard, you know, I mean, like she doesn't care that she doesn't have 16,000 songs that she owns in her library.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't bother her. To me, I like having those. I'm getting more used to renting music for the going forward. But, you know, knowing that even if Apple closes down, I still have my 16,000 songs I can listen to, it reassures me.
Yeah, I really like having my personal music library, too. But, you know, you said renting music, and it just made something just, like, flip in my mind where a data bit flipped is what happened, and I was able to burn a new neural pathway and realized why I'm not having trouble with paying for Apple Music, or when my 3 months free period is up, paying for Apple Music, where a lot of other people are freaking out and they're going, I don't want to rent my music. To me, I'm not seeing it any different than if you have a cable television subscription. People don't watch a show and think, well, I'm just renting this show. They're paying for a service so that they have content. And to me, Apple Music is the same thing. I'm just
right. It's on-demand music. It's whatever you want to hear on demand. So it's a subscription. And I don't mind paying monthly. And really, I'd say 90% of my 16,000 tracks are up there anyway, so I have access to most of what I own and another 29 million plus songs wherever I go, that as long as I have internet access. And to me, that's worth $15 a month for the family pack, or $10 a month for a solo.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, I can't remember. I think I heard Dave talking about it on Mac Geek Gab, but when I was growing up and all through my life, I've spent more than $10 a month on music. It's just, you know, my budget for it was a couple albums a month. And albums, you know, I guess a long time ago they were $5 or $6, but you're talking $10, $15. So $30 maybe a month in new music, some months more, some months less. But, you know, I went through life buying way more than the $10 a month that I'm putting out now. And while I've bought a few things since I got Apple Music because they weren't available, I haven't really bought anything since Spotify. I've had Spotify 3 years. I think in 3 years I bought maybe 3 albums and 5 tracks. Now, whereas I used to buy two a month, 3 a month albums.
I still buy a lot of music, but I never was really enamored with Spotify or Pandora. So I, until Apple Music came along, I had not found a music subscription service that I liked enough that I was willing to pay for. And I am going to pay for Apple Music.
I'm a former Spotify subscriber, happily paid for, you know, 3 years. And both of my kids pay for Spotify. My son switched to Apple Music so he can save $10 a month himself. Mm-hmm. My daughter likes Spotify so much, she still hasn't decided. She may keep paying for it herself rather than accept my kind offer of I'll pay for the family plan.
You're really nice, Dad.
The $5 extra really isn't going to kill me.
Nonetheless, you're a really nice dad.
Well,
yeah. But
you might want to ask my kids about that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm a nice dad. I've been known to be a nice dad on occasion.
Yeah. So anyhow, just the whole thing with paying for Apple Music, I'm not having any problem with this.
Me either. I love it. And I love that it's available everywhere. And I love that Siri is involved in this, because that was what was wrong with Spotify. I couldn't say to Spotify, hey, play music by the Rolling Stones, or play Neil Young's newest album. Oh, you can't, because he took his music off because it sounds bad because he's making a high resolution snake oil player or something?
Yeah, it sounds bad because you're not getting audio that your ears can't hear and your audio equipment can't reproduce anyhow.
I loved whoever it was that said it was a tall glass of snake water.
I like that.
Something like that. Yeah, it's, well, I've seen and heard enough demonstrations. And when I wrote the little iTunes book in 1990-something, I did this myself. Of course, we didn't have AAC at the time, but I ripped a bunch of music I listened to all the time at like 8 different bit rates.
Mm-hmm.
And then I listened to it not just on my iPhone and iPod with headphones, but on stereo systems in cars, et cetera, et cetera. And my conclusion at the time was I and most people couldn't tell the difference between 256 and 320. And a lot of people couldn't tell the difference between 192 and 256. I could most of the time, but only on better equipment. You know, in a car, I couldn't tell at all.
Well, in cars a car, are like the worst stereo place for a sound
right
system.
Exactly. So, you know, you could look at saving music uncompressed, or you could compress it by, you know, a factor of 4 or 5x, and it'll sound the same to most people's ears. That to me, I was, at first, when I first started doing MP3s, I ripped everything at 128, because that's...
That was the best we could do at the time.
Well, that's what I thought you were supposed to do, you know, because everything I'd ever seen was 128. And then I realized you could make them higher quality, but it made them bigger. And then I got really interested in testing. So I tested a lot for that book. And my conclusion was if you're saving your files at anything over 256, you're making bigger files, then you can hear the difference. Now, I'm not sure it's not a great idea to save an uncompressed version of files that you really care about, because then you can always downsample them, but you'll always have the original, and it's like toothpaste. You can't put it back in. Once you've compressed it, you can't uncompress it again and say, okay, this is back the way it started. So for a lot of stuff, I'll keep the raw, you know, AIF or whatever you call it, the
AIF or AAC.
Uncompressed audio. Well, they call it something else on Windows. Do we have any Windows users listening?
Show of hands.
If so, I'll try to remember what they call it. Maybe you remember.
The Windows file formats that come to mind immediately from your WAVE.
Well, that's it.
There you go.
I think that is. And that's the same as an AIF. They're uncompressed 44.1, like CD quality audio.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I did a lot of testing at the time. I haven't done it again. But the question then is, do I want to rip my originals as uncompressed files and, you know, have to buy a new hard disk every few months? Or do I want to store them at the highest bit rate, you know, at 256 or 320, and just say, you know, the heck with it. I don't need the bits that were compressed out. I can't hear them anyway. I don't know the answer to that yet. I'm still wrestling with it, and I've still got a library that's about a third uncompressed and the rest compressed to some degree.
Yeah, I think almost all of my libraries is compressed to some degree. And I'm glad that I had the opportunity when I ripped my CDs long ago to be able to re-rip them later, because they needed later on to have a better compression, simply because the audio equipment that I had improved so much that I could then hear the difference between my really low bitrate files and my higher bitrate files.
Sure. Yeah. A lot of the stuff I heard in the beginning, a lot of the 128K MP3s, they sounded bad to me. You know, they sounded like hissy and flat and didn't have any punch to them. And the better the equipment you listened on, the worse they sounded.
Yep.
But in the beginning, that was all there were. And it was acceptable because on a lot of equipment, you really couldn't tell much. You know, it's like even playing uncompressed stuff on crappy equipment.
It's not
garbage in, garbage
great.
Out. You know, yep. If you've got garbage equipment, no matter what you put in, the sound coming out isn't going to be great. Yep. So for a lot of people, you know, they never noticed. I think going forward, I'm going to just rip everything at 320 and not bother saving uncompressed versions.
Yeah, I've been doing everything at 320 for a while now.
I've decided now, only because I've already got 1 terabyte. I just hit 1 terabyte for the iTunes library, or maybe I'm a little over now. And that was kind of a bending point because discs come in terabyte chunks, and I have a bunch of 1 terabyte backup discs still.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't been retired yet, and now the iTunes folder is 1.08 terabytes, so I can't back it up to a single one of the old discs. And I'd like to keep it on, you know, under 2 terabytes so that it's somewhat portable. I guess 4 terabytes now. I've got a 4 terabyte portable drive that I could take with me wherever I go. Actually, I have 2 of them. One of them is a RAID, and it's Thunderbolt. And I use it for editing video in remote locations. It's the most fun thing in the world.
That's actually really cool.
It's fast enough for me to edit 1280 by 720, which is not HD, but improved definition, or I don't know. It's way better than like cable TV or VHS.
I think that's the technical term for it. Way better.
Way better. Yeah. And I can edit that on airplanes. And the thing is, it's Thunderbolt and it's bus-powered. So on my new MacBook Pro, I can edit probably for about 3.5 or 4 hours straight, editing, you know, enhanced definition video. I don't want to say HD because I did all my TV show at 1280 to save bandwidth, and because I didn't think it mattered that much if it was in real HD, but it would have cost me 2x in storage to go to real HD. So everything I did was at 1280, and I did it. I worked in airplanes. I worked in a park. I decided it would be fun to edit video at the park, and I took my MacBook Pro and this Passport Pro RAID Thunderbolt deal to and edited video under a tree for a couple hours.
Okay, that's very cool.
It was totally awesome.
I love that we live in the future.
And I love that you can acquire the video and then just sit down somewhere and edit it.
You know, so I just realized we went down a rabbit hole from upgrading your Macs and went so far down that rabbit hole, I think we just popped up a hole on the other side.
The other side of the earth?
Very likely.
Oh, good. I've been craving Thai food.
Oh, I totally get that. So, but anyhow, the point is that we did this whole meandering thing and ended up just mentioning your TV show.
Oh,
yeah. We should totally talk about your TV show.
I love my TV show.
Nope. Bob, tell me about your TV show.
So it's not really a TV show. I just call it that because everything that I've been doing with video for the last couple of years is with the intention of someday getting Netflix or Amazon or the History Channel or somebody to put my show on the air and let me have a half hour a week to talk about technology. So I started shooting what I called episodes. They're segments that might appear on a weekly show. There's some reviews, there's some commentary stuff, there's kind of some newsy stuff, and apps and things like that. So I made 6 episodes before the book monster reared its ugly head and I had to start writing 3 books at the same time. And I'm still doing
that.
You're
just an overachiever.
Well, the show's on hiatus. That's what I say. I started the 6th episode, actually, and hated it and scrapped it. And that was kind of when the books hit.
So the lost episode.
Well, if you go there, there's a whole story of the 6th episode. You'll see. Anyway, boblevitis.tv is the website, and there's 5 episodes. And there's a prologue episode. There's like a prequel. It's called Why Am I Doing This? So I didn't think that was an episode, but if you're curious, you can watch that also. It's the prelude, or I think it's called the prelude or something. Introduction. Anyway, they're up there, and each one is 5 to 10 minutes long, and each one is kind of focused on a single subject. Mm-hmm. And if you like them, tell your friends, and tell Netflix and Amazon that I should have a real TV show, because I have no budget. My company's called Involuntary Auteur Productions. Because I don't want to be the cameraman and the sound guy and everything else. It's like I just want to show up and write my stuff and get in front of a camera and say, you know, it would look great with a picture like that. Okay, show it to me when you're done. Because that's not the fun part for me. Well, no, the fun part for me is the finished product. It's like mm-hmm. the grind in the middle where you're editing and watching stuff over and over again. I could do without. And you know, I'd be happy to spend more time developing the good stuff and less time doing the stuff that someone else could do better than me. Because I'm not a great film editor. I know that. But I know how to do it. And so that's the problem, is I know how to do that. I know how to, you know, record sound. I know how to write for television. So I am it. I am the only employee, the on-screen talent, the producer, the director, the writer, et cetera, et cetera. The credits are really funny. They go on, and they're all me. You know, I'm the best boy. I'm craft services. I don't even know what the best boy does, but I'm it. My dog is the best dog. And I don't think anybody else is in the credits, because nobody else actually does anything. So it's been really fun. Final Cut Pro, if you're not familiar with it, Apple makes a fantastic video editing solution. And it's capable of doing just about any video you want to edit, from stuff that's going to play on YouTube to major motion pictures that are going to be released theatrically with 5.1 sound. And in fact, I think you can even work with 4K now. Although, like I said, I don't even work with real HD most of the time.
You're HD-ish.
HD-ish, exactly. HD, kinda. Kinda HD. Yeah. But it's a great piece of software, and I have to say, I do enjoy the time we spend together, me and Final Cut Pro.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'd enjoy it more if I could spend less time. You know, sometimes it takes an hour to finish 1 minute of on-screen video, or 2 hours, and it's frustrating because it seems like you ought to be able to just make it look the way you want and be done with it. And most of the time, that's not the way it goes. It's an iterative process. You do it, you look at it, and you go, nope, it's too slow, it's too fast, it needs to be before or after this. It's very tedious. So I would love to have, and the other thing is, because it's just me, I can't do stuff like go shoot on location. So I can't go to cool places that have cool technology and do shows, segments about them. And I can't really do, although I probably could do a Skype thing, but I can't like go interview Bill Atkinson. I could do Bill Atkinson on Skype, but I'm afraid that isn't very compelling. I would want to, you know, take a crew and go to his house or office, or have him come to the studio and show stuff.
So you really do need a crew.
Well, I want to do a real show, but the 5 episodes that are up on my website are kind of an example of the directions it might go. You know, it's like every week, who knows? It's kind of like when you watch any of the late night shows, you never know what you're going to get. You might get a comedian, you might get music, you might get an actor pitching a new movie, a TV show, but you never really know what you're going to see. It's kind of whatever's topical today. And that's the kind of thing I want to do for technology, is kind of like a talk show, but I want to do most of the talking.
Yeah, I think this is really cool. And I love that you've started the show. And what I'm hoping is that the right people notice and you get picked up. So it's like a regular network thing.
Well, I'm not done yet. I'm not done yet. I've just we're on hiatus because I've had to go back to the work that pays the bills. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I finish, I'm going to put together a short reel that I can like go to Hollywood and knock on doors, and I'm going to try to get in to see some of these cable programmers.
Awesome. And in the meantime, once you finish dealing with the monstrosity that has become a multi-book schedule,
all due at the same time. Yes, there will be. There will be. You know, let me tell anybody out there that's thinking about going into the writing business, don't. Not because I'm afraid of the competition, but because Apple is the... And I assume if you're listening to this, you'd be writing something about Apple. They are very hard to work with on long... What do you call it? Long lead time projects.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working on an iPhone book, and at this point, I've done a lot of the work, but I don't know anything more than you do about what the next iPhone will be called or what features it will have or anything like that. And I don't have any idea when El Capitan will ship.
Right.
So, you know, I'm kind of working on these books in the blind. I'm working from the betas, and it's just, you know, because Apple doesn't say when these things are going to happen, they all have to be done now. They all have to be done as soon as possible, and they kind of work around the operating system releases, which are kind of coincidental this year and last year. So iOS 9 and El Capitan will ship probably the same week, or, you know, within a few weeks of each other.
I think that's a safe bet.
But when that what week that's going to be is still up. You know, there's just no telling. Although I'm guessing it'll be about the third week in September. I'm going on the record with that. I'm putting the envelope to my forehead and the hermetically sealed mayonnaise jar and the whole thing. My prediction, third week of September, we have El Capitan, iOS 9, and new phones shipping at the very least, probably new iPad Pro.
I'm with you.
John Martellaro, if you're listening, iPad Pro.
John has been pining for that iPad Pro for so long. But I'm with you, Bob.
Six product announcements, he didn't get one. Yeah. And he was sure he was getting one each time. I think this time he might be getting one.
I hope so, because I don't know how much more he can take.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but did you see the rumor that they're a hybrid, that they're actually a keyboard and screen combination, like a Surface kind of thingy?
I did, and I'm totally calling fake.
I think so, too. I think so, too. That just seems like a path they're not likely to drive down. Now that I've said that, of course, I'll get the Kelly curse, and they'll do it because I said that.
Well, you know, it is nice to be so important that you can say something and Apple will immediately find a way to retool their entire production system
and do something entirely different. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
They do that to me all the time. In fact, I think that may be in their corporate charter. Every morning they wake up and say, what are we going to do to screw with Leviatus today?
You know, that's a pretty good business model if you can make it work.
But they seem to be doing very well with it.
Yeah, I think so.
Even maybe today. I don't know. What's the stock done today? I don't pay any attention. I think this week it was on a roller coaster.
The whole stock market was on a roller
coaster.
Right,
I know, but I haven't paid any attention to whether Apple is bucking the trend or what.
Apple has I haven't looked today, this afternoon, so I don't know how Apple's doing right now, but they've been doing pretty well. They recovered nicely from the Monday morning freak out with China. Because, you know, China was the impetus for
the
market thing. And Apple seems to have been
Rebounding quite
nicely.
The market's up pretty remarkably today. The Dow's up 2.5%, S&P's up 2.4%, NASDAQ's up 2.6%. So today there's a rally.
There you go.
But that's because yesterday there was a crash, or not a crash, but a
correction.
A sell-off. Yeah, and it looks like Apple has kind of been holding its own. It went down below 100 for a few minutes there a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was up in up at arms, and then I think Wells Fargo raised its rating for and said
that, you know, happened 100.
It's way undervalued. Yeah, yesterday. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't speculate in Apple stock, but it seems to me that it's got a ways to go before it plateaus. And I've watched this go on for years. And it always does, and it will go down at some point. It just can't. There's no way it can sustain like this forever. But that'll be when, you know, when Apple really screws up and starts the long slide into oblivion. You know, maybe that won't happen to them. But think of all the pioneers that are no longer with us.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I'm going to think positive and assume that at least for quite a while.
Well, they have enough money. They have enough money. Yeah, they have enough money to last, I'd say conservatively, another million years. So,
all right. So
if they did nothing else, if they did nothing else till the end of time, I think they have enough cash to exist for a couple million years.
Yeah, probably. Hey, I think we have a great show here. I think we've hit a good wrap-up point.
Wow.
I know.
Was that? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, we're
like 50 some odd minutes already. Boy, yeah. Time flies when you're having fun. I thought we were like at the halfway point.
No, I've been watching closely because I wanted to make sure that important things that I just wanted to hear you talk about happened. It's, well, this has been kind of fun. It's been like an hour-long, just fun kick back and chit-chat interview with you. And
there wasn't that much news-like stuff this week to talk about. You know, once you got past the Apple recall, and well, I guess the stock market might have been a good topic, but by the time people listen to this, something completely different could be going on.
You know, and having an opportunity just to get one-on-one time with you with microphones, I wasn't going to pass up the opportunity just to sit back and talk and learn more about your world.
Wind me up.
And it's not difficult to do.
It was fun. It was fun. Anytime. Hey, listen, anytime Brian has a sore throat or anything, you just call me.
I'll just give you a call.
You know where to find me.
I do.
I love standing in for Brian. Thanks for letting me, Brian.
Yeah, Brian, you can hang out in the witness protection program as often as you need, and Bob's got your back.
Does that mean he got caught?
Well, I don't know how much I can say without blowing his cover.
Okay, because so, I know Dave says don't get caught. And
right. Yep, Dave says don't get caught.
I'd like to believe he didn't get caught, but if he's in the witness protection program.
Well, being in witness protection program doesn't necessarily mean you were caught, but it does mean you saw.
Well, I wish him well wherever he is today.
And so do I. And
he was hiding out here last week. I didn't know that he was in witness protection, or I might not have let him stay at my house. But
did you see that white van parked down the street?
Yeah, it's always out there.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Brian should be back with us next week, which will be great. And
if he's not, you know my number.
I know your number. All right. I'm going to wrap up the show.
I'll shut up now.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening. Wow. I just pulled a Brian and messed up what I was going to say next. So I'll also pull a Brian and gracefully recover by saying, our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. That's all for this week. And Bob, it's great to have you here on the show today. So thank you so much for being here.
Anytime. Anytime.
Awesome. And listeners, thank you for listening. We will see you online at the Mac Observer.